that the flight would not be successful.
That's a hard question to answer, part of it. Feelings are something that you just cannot put into words. But answering the part about wondering about the flight, there never has been a moment since
Let me explain briefly. This is Mrs. John H. Glenn, Sr., the mother of astronaut John Glenn, talking in New Concord, Ohio.
When he did take the flight, which was today. And right now, I'm so very, very thankful to God for his safety and for the success of the mission which went today.
Thank you. Hughes Rudd, CBS. Mrs. Glenn, I understand that at the moment the rocket actually lifted off the pad, neither you nor Mr. Glenn said anything whatever. What were you thinking at that exact moment?
Well, I think the most tense moment would be just after the launch and before the word came that an orbit had been attained, because that is a time of suspense. I know there are a lot of split-second things which must take place just in the right order. And, of course, that was the most tense moment. I don't remember just what I was thinking at the time.
Jim Hurlbut at NBC News. Mr. and Mrs. John Glenn. The name of your son has been in the prayers of a great many people for a long time, and the whole free world has been impressed with his frequent expressions of religious faith. Do you believe that those prayers and that religious faith played an important part in the success of today's flight? And do you believe this will be important in the future of the free world?
You answer that, then.
Well, we certainly do. We're a Christian family. And it thrills us to hear John give his testimony over there as to his Christian faith. And I think that today shows that prayer has been answered. We've had hundreds of letters from friends and people that we never knew or never expected to know that they were praying. And seemingly, I notice among the newsmen many times, our prayers will be with you, or something like that, in an interview. We appreciate that very much, and we have faith enough to believe that our prayer has been answered.
Thank you, sir. If nobody else is going to ask another question, I'd like to ask another question. Here we have one.
The Associated Press, my name's Hall. Have you been invited to a White House press reception or a reception
No.
of any kind?
No.
When No. do you expect to see John?
Well, we would like to see him just as soon after he comes home as possible.
Do you expect him home soon?
We haven't heard anything about that as yet.
Last question. Jack Burchill, now that your son has become the first to orbit the bird, what would your feelings be if you were picked to be the first to make an attempt at the moon?
Well, I think that's a long ways off yet myself. I think there's a lot to be done, and there's a lot more to be done in the orbital realm before we try to go to the moon. But I wouldn't be a bit surprised when it comes time to go that he'll want to make the first trip.
How have you managed to stand up under the barrage of attention, camera crews and reporters that have been living almost with you for the past 5 weeks or so?
How have you managed to stand up under the attention, barrage of reporters?
Oh, yeah, we've enjoyed that very much. We've certainly been a wonderful bunch of people, and The first few times that we met the press, I think the first time we went to the door and there was five men standing there, and they started to introduce themselves, you know. Well, I can't remember one name, let alone a dozen. I said, well, come on in. As far as I'm concerned, you're all Joneses.
Don't miss all that excitement today?
Pardon me?
Did you miss all that excitement?
Will you miss all excitement?
Will you miss excitement?
Oh, I expect we will, yes. We've enjoyed every minute of it. We've spent about 5 weeks every day, maybe four or five different people each day. And there's one very humorous thing happened. I think the first bunch was there when we were very much excited and had never been in front of the camera before. And I started to make a voice recording picture. And all once a guy ran out and he says, "Cut!" Well, I thought I'd broke the machine or something, you know. I pretty bad way. So the man that had the sound effect out in the kitchen, he said, "There's a noise in there. I'm getting a noise." Well, one of the guys looked over at me and said, "I was playing at that mic cord." Said he had my fingers on the mic cord and I was playing on it. So they started to make another recording, and I just thought it'd be a good joke, so I took my finger and I just scratched about three times on the mic, and he says, "There's that noise again."
That's confetti flying over New York.
Well, you've been listening to a news conference at New Concord, Ohio, with Mr. and Mrs. John Herschel Glenn, Sr., the mother and father of astronaut John Herschel Glenn, Jr. And you could probably detect the relief that was very, very evident in the voice of Mr. Glenn, especially as he relaxed now. He was able to make jokes, and he had a most appreciative audience. That news conference took place in the high school gymnasium at New Concord, Ohio, where a large crowd had gathered. This was a great day for New Concord. This has really put New Concord on the map in the way that astronaut John Glenn himself, simply by being picked for the flight, never could do. It was a great day for New Concord. It was a great day for the United States. It certainly was a great day in Arlington, Virginia, where the wife and children of astronaut Glenn have been waiting out the long period, the long hours during which John Glenn, husband and father, was in orbit around the Earth. Now we're going to switch directly to Arlington, Virginia. Dave Derry, Dave Derry reporting.
This is Dave Derry reporting from Arlington, Virginia, where a NASA representative said just a moment ago it would be at least one or two more minutes before Mrs. Glenn would come outside. Inside the house at this time are Mrs. Glenn's parents, Dr. and Mrs. H.W. Castor of New Concord, Ohio, family friend and pastor, the Reverend Frank Irwin of the Little Falls United Presbyterian Church, along with Colonel Miller and Mrs. Miller, the neighbors next door, and, of course, the astronaut's wife, Anne, and their 16-year-old son, David, and 14-year-old daughter, Lynn. We're standing on the front yard, just about 12, perhaps 15 feet from the front door, and we're surrounded here by many newsmen, photographers, and several sightseers, people who have driven by in automobiles, have gotten out, and it looks like now Mrs. Glenn is coming out the front door. Ford Eastman, the NASA representative, who has been acting as our go-between between the press and the Glenn family, here is Mrs. Glenn. Mrs.
Here
Glenn is
comes.
Walking outside. She's now in front of the microphone, and there's Lynn, 14-year-old Lynn, 16-year-old David, and I can see inside the door a man who apparently is, I believe it's Mrs. Glenn's father. CBS News correspondent Nancy Honchman is standing up right next to Mrs. Glenn at this time, and in a moment when Mrs. Glenn begins to speak, we'll switch up there and we'll hear Mrs. Glenn. People are now running up, and the area is becoming quite crowded. Everybody is smiling up there, in particular Mrs. Glenn. A very pretty, slim woman with black hair, sparkling dark eyes, a great big broad smile on her face right now. And Lynn has now moved in between Nancy Honchman and Mrs. Glenn. And photographers are pressing up, getting pictures now before the interview by the reporters begins, and any comments by Mrs. Glenn. David is standing next to his mother, and he also has a big grin on his mouth. Looks mighty happy, although they do look a little tired. Now, here is Mrs. Glenn.
Quiet! There are several things that we would like to say, but I would want everyone to know that this is the most wonderful day for my family, and we're so proud of their father, of the Mercury team, of everyone that's made this such a successful day.
Louder.
Thank you.
Mrs. Glenn.
Do you have any plans to see your husband in the going south, perhaps? Or will you wait until he comes back here?
Well, for the way we feel now, I think we'll wait until they bring him back or wherever they say we can go see him.
Mrs. Glenn, have you had any chance to talk to him, or do you have any plans to talk to him?
There are no plans now.
Mrs. Glenn, your husband said his condition was excellent. How is yours?
I'm happy. I feel wonderful.
How about you, Lynn?
Same.
And David Glenn?
I feel just the same.
David, you tracked this all the way through. Were you in contact, and did you have your dad located all the time?
Well, we had a chart on a stopwatch. All right. And just looked at the stopwatch and looked at the track being the time. I'll mark that along the track the capsule was going to follow. So we just followed it along like that.
And we had two gloves, too.
Well, Lynn, according to your calculations, did your father stay on course?
As far as we know, he did. And as far as it turned out, he did, too.
Mrs. Glenn, were you worried very much during the course of the flight?
Well, I think that I probably was some, yes. But then there's that faith that sort of makes things look like it's going to be fine. And it
did. Mrs. Glenn, you say you had faith and you all prayed immediately after the recovery to demonstrate your belief in God's hand in this flight. Can you tell us anything about how you felt about that from the beginning?
Well, my faith now is the same that it's always been, and I don't believe there would be anything more that I would like to say now. No.
Lynn? Understand you were too excited to sit still today. I'm always too excited to sit still.
What are your plans for tonight?
None in particular, except I've got to catch up on homework.
Mrs. Glenn, do you plan to have any kind of a neighborhood celebration here this evening?
Yes, we do. There will be the Millers and the Browns next door, and my mother and my father.
Will it be your house?
Well, I'm not sure yet. I'm not sure.
Glenn, is there any indication when you'll see your husband?
No. Mrs. Glenn. Oh, I think my I would say the last 15 seconds would be the that would I would say
before liftoff or
yes.
Mrs. Glenn, Walter Cronkite is down here at the other end. I wonder if you could say a word to him. You can hear him through this little earphone piece.
Hi, Walter. How are you? Well, thank you very, very much, Walter.
He's talking now to Walter Cronkite, who's on Cape Canaveral.
Well, thank you.
Mrs. Glenn,
and
what
now
was
here
your
also
best moment?
Is,
you've been asked about
Lynn Glenn.
Your worst moment.
Walter, would you like...
I think my best moment was 5 minutes and 15 seconds after when we...
Well, that was a news conference at Arlington, Virginia, with Mrs. John Glenn, Jr. and her two children. As they celebrated this triumph of Lieutenant Colonel John Glenn, who has now orbited the world three times and is back on board the destroyer NOAA. And Bill Downs, reporting from the carrier Randolph, tells us that the medical debriefing, which we were talking about a while ago, will take place on the NOAA.
so he will be there for a couple of hours. It will not take place, as we expected earlier, on board the Randolph. Well, as we said a minute ago, Colonel Powers, the Project Mercury spokesman, has left Cape Canaveral. He's now on his way to Grand Turk Island to take part in the extensive debriefing when Colonel Glenn arrives there later today. Here at Cape Canaveral, the shadows are beginning to lengthen. It's still a beautiful, clear, sunny day, but the shadows are lengthening. It's getting on toward 4 o'clock in the afternoon here on the central coast of Florida. And it's been a long day, a day full of excitement, beginning at 9:47 a.m. Eastern Standard Time this morning, when the Atlas booster lifted off pad 14 and hurtled John Glenn into orbit around the Earth. And John Glenn went 3 orbits, traveling at a speed of 17,545 miles an hour at an altitude ranging from 100 to 160 miles above the Earth. Each orbit took approximately 89 minutes. There were 3 of them. He was in orbit about 4.5 hours. He was back on the Atlantic 4 hours and 50 minutes after leaving Cape Canaveral. Undoubtedly the most eventful 4 hours and 50 minutes of his entire life. As he returned, the Mercury spacecraft successfully withstood temperatures up to 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit on the blunt face, the heat shield, and Glenn was able to get through that experience without any difficulty. However, he did say as he came down, boy, that was a real fireball. So now he's on board the destroyer NOAA in the Atlantic. He will be going through the debriefing process, and then he'll be flown to an island for 48 hours of extensive debriefing for rest and relaxation. After that, back to Washington, no doubt, for a meeting with President Kennedy and a news conference. And President Kennedy emphasized in those words that we heard from him a few minutes ago that the judgment of the men in charge of the Mercury manned space flight program has been vindicated. Colonel Glenn is a hero, and the entire country is grateful. Well, for about 9 hours now, with a few pauses here and there, we've been covering this event from our CBS News mobile headquarters at Cape Canaveral, and we want to emphasize that the coverage is by no means over. About half an hour from now, the National Space Agency will hold a news conference here at the Cape, and we will be covering that. So we urge you not to go away, because about half an hour from now, we will be back to cover that news conference in full. And at 7:10 Eastern Time this evening, we'll be back also with a complete recap of today's events. So we urge you also to listen to that program. This has been CBS News at Cape Canaveral, where today we saw the start and heard the finish of this country's first manned orbital flight. Lieutenant Colonel John Glenn, United States Marine Corps, went 3 times around the world and has come back safely. CBS News will continue, as we say, in about half an hour from now with that NASA news conference, and later this evening with a special recap at 7:10 Eastern Time. This is Dallas Townsend at Cape Canaveral.
Man in Orbit, another important moment in history, brought to you by Rambler and your Rambler dealer, who invites you to take advantage of his weekend special deal on a new Rambler. This is the CBS Radio Network.
He made it, and a happy nation rejoices in the accomplishment. The Senate and a rebuff for the administration, the president and the government workers' pay, and a communist setback in the United Nations. This is Prescott Robinson in New York, sitting in for Douglas Edwards, reporting for the CBS Radio Network. Humanity today was as nearly united as humanity ever can be, as communists, Republicans, Democrats, pious and impious men, kept eyes on the screen, ears to the speaker, and prayed, whether they willed it or not, that astronaut John Glenn would get successfully off the Earth and, once up there, would come successfully down again. That he did both these things, the world now knows. For the latest word on the miraculously fortunate feat, here is CBS News correspondent Charles Van Fremd, direct from Cape Canaveral.
What is there to say after a day without precedence in America's space achievements? Only that it was sensational, dramatic, with a happy ending. And though it was a very long time coming, it was very worth the wait. John Glenn is now on the destroyer NOAA, out in the Atlantic Ocean after a 4-hour and 50-minute rocket ride that carried him 3 times around the world. From his destroyer position, he will be moved to Grand Turk Island in the Bahamas, and there he will spend the next 48 hours relaxing and also going through what the space agency calls a debriefing, in which he will tell doctors, psychologists, people assigned to the Project Mercury program, just everything that he can think of, that he experienced during his 4-hour and 50-minute ride. Also, of course, he will get a good deal of rest and relaxation. After that, it's assumed that Glenn will fly to Washington, where he'll receive a hero's welcome, just as did the first American man in space, Alan Shepard. That would include a meeting at the White House with the president and probably a news conference. Scientists, of course, will start evaluating all the data they got from miles and miles of telemetry right away. And as Walter Williams, the project officer for Project Mercury, has said before, this flight was just the end of the beginning. It was the first American orbital flight, but by no means the last. The next one on the schedule should come about 60 days from now, when astronaut Deke Slayton will try and match Glenn's historic ride. Sitting right here now in the CBS mobile unit and looking out across the way towards Pad 14, it's rather hard to believe that it was just at 9:47 this morning that Glenn made his ride. In the intervening hours, we've been bombarded with all sorts of material from Project Mercury spokesman John Shorty Powers, and there'll be a news conference to follow in just about 30 minutes' time. CBS News will carry that news conference from the Cape in about 30 minutes' time. That's the story for now, though. This is CBS News, Cape Canaveral.
In other news today, tradition-minded United States senators don't like to be pushed, and today a hurry-up procedure to force a showdown on President Kennedy's plan for a Department of Urban Affairs didn't sit too well. By a surprising margin of 15 votes, the Senate rejected a motion to force an early vote to create the Department of Urban Affairs. Had it been approved, it would have made certain that both houses of Congress went on record for or against the president's plan. President Kennedy today asked the Congress for a pay increase for more than 1.5 million white-collar government workers to bring their salaries into line with private industries. The amount of money involved, $1 billion over the next 3 years. The president proposed reform of the federal pay system to provide for wage hikes ranging from 3.7% for clerical workers to 35% for top-bracket employees. The president said enactment of the reform plan was fundamental to the maintenance of a standard of excellence in the federal service. Elsewhere on Capitol Hill, Senator Kenneth Keating asked a Senate committee to expand its inquiry into rights of servicemen to include the question of segregation in the armed forces. He said that while the Pentagon insists that integration has been effected, Negroes were still being forced to use segregated facilities at certain southern bases. A rebuff for Cuba and the communist bloc today in the United Nations as the General Assembly rejected a last-ditch move to get U.N. action on Fidel Castro's charges of U.S. intervention. The vote came on a mild resolution introduced by Mongolia, which simply called for friendly relations among countries recognizing the right of self-determination. The U.S. delegate Francis Plimpton called it a trick and declared it would give undue dignity to the Cuban charges, which he called crude, defamatory, and false. Ambassador Adlai Stevenson missed the debate. A spokesman said he is confined to bed with influenza. Defense Secretary Robert McNamara returned to Washington today from his conference with the Pacific Command at Hawaii. McNamara said that U.S. military aid to South Vietnam is becoming more and more effective in the fight against communist guerrillas there, that he was delighted with the progress he noted since his last trip to Hawaii in January. He told newsmen that our training aids and our logistical assistance are becoming more and more effective. He reiterated President Kennedy's recent assurances that no U.S. troops are being put into combat in Vietnam. He did say, however, that technicians and advisors serving with the South Vietnam Army are under instruction to return fire for self-protection if fired upon. There have been recent reports of new weapons being used by the North Vietnamese communists against American planes and helicopters doing transport duty, but McNamara said these appear to be only rifles and small arms. Britain today said that unless NATO helps her correct her balance of payments deficit, she will be forced to reduce the number of British troops stationed on mainland Europe. In her annual white paper on defense, Britain said today that she will fulfill her obligations to NATO, but the proportion of her forces outside the Commonwealth depends on what NATO does to curb the outflow of British currency. And Britain's aviation ministry announced today that Britain, the United States, and West Germany will share equally all future costs of Britain's B-1127, a vertical takeoff fighter plane. The ministry said the three-power agreement is the first of its kind. The plane, designed in 1957, has been built in two research models, both of which have been flown, and four other experimental models now under construction. Pope John XXIII today opened a preparatory session for this year's Ecumenical Council and began the meeting by welcoming Poland's Stefan Cardinal Wyszynski, who got special permission to come to Rome at this time. The Pope made no mention of the church-state struggle in Poland, now under a communist regime. In Hamburg, search teams are still looking for victims of last weekend's storm, with the threat of typhus and cholera spurring them on. Over 200 bodies have been recovered so far, and officials say there may be almost as many more in the wreckage the storm left behind. Hamburg's 2 million residents have been warned to boil all their drinking water and not to eat meats and other perishables left in shops when the floodwaters rose. In labor news today, a federal grand jury at Kansas City, Missouri, has indicted six Teamster Union officials for alleged embezzlement of union funds. And the United Auto Workers today postponed its scheduled strike at five Alice Chalmers manufacturing plants across the nation. The union said that production will be continued at the plants on a day-to-day basis. And that's the story on labor.